Welcome to Day Zero Update for October 13th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Logie.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jen Red Victoria.
And yeah, we are almost at episode 500. If I have my numbers right, this is 499.
Yep.
So our next show will be number 500, which is wild to see, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for this week's show, we have plenty of news. We have some subscription news. We got some stuff coming out here, a bunch of delays, some remasters happening, featuring games that maybe don't deserve it, but people may pay for them anyway. As well as Nintendo's next big hardware announcement that everybody is excited about, so stay tuned for that. As well as some more industry news and such. So yeah, we'll get to that stuff a little bit later, but we'll be talking about what we've been playing here, and I'll kick it off. Been playing a good bit of Halls of Torment. That went 1.0, I think, in September. So I've been kind of playing it here and there on my Steam Deck and on my PC as well. That still is a lot of fun. It is a Vampire Survivors clone, but in the vein of a Diablo 1 or 2 kind of style. Kind of more low-res, isometric kind of viewpoints, all that kind of stuff that is a pretty neat change of pace from what many of these are. And yeah, I'm not 100% sure exactly what the big changes they've been making in the last few updates. I think just adding new stages and maybe some new heroes or whatever, but the stuff I've noticed so far is that I can track challenges now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 'cause the way they handle that stuff is every character has essentially like a big like grid of challenges on it. And as you get certain ones available from the start, once you complete them, they open up the ones around them. And you know, you keep working your way through unlocking all of them, hopefully. Bunch of them are early ones are easier to do to the point where you get the later ones that are a lot about like use these abilities and get this much damage on them, that kind of stuff, which initially playing without anything tracking it was just kind of a crapshoot because once you start getting going with abilities and such, it can be tough to tell like what sort of damage you're really putting out there on enemies and all that kind of stuff. So that helps let you know, especially when I am maybe in between challenges that I'm tracking, looking around, clicking on stuff and seeing like, okay, this one I'm close on, I'll focus on that, that kind of stuff. Though maybe the one downside is that when you're in the challenges screen, you don't see the progress there on challenges. I kind of wish you could. You have to actually track it and then pop out to the game screen to actually see what the progress is. You kind of see what it needs and like what your previous high is, but it doesn't show you like what you're currently doing. So that kind of maybe limits your ability to know like what you should be focusing on if you have certain things working well with your choices and all that. So yeah, there's definitely some good stuff here. Looking at putting some more time into it as I get some more time. But yeah, that's been fun so far, diving back into that. Let's see, also been playing some more Power Wash Simulator as the new Shrek DLC is out now. I've finished up the first two maps and kind of ended up watching the three movies that I think are on Peacock for Shrek. Still like the first one a lot. The second two are fine for what they are, but gives me more context for where the story and this stuff is set. So like the first one's set in Duloc, which is in the first movie, and kind of set after the big brawl happens with Shrek fighting the other knights as they get sent on the quest to go rescue Fiona. So the knights that failed kind of get angry and just create a huge mess out in the courtyard that you have to clean up. So that's a fun one, though it's a very big one. Big map to clean up, so yeah, that took a little bit of time there. The second one takes place technically at the beginning of the second movie. As they're on their honeymoon, they go to this Hansel's honeymoon thing. I forget what the specific name for it is, but it's basically a little cabin that they go to. Hansel's honeymoon hideaway job that is set at this cabin and such, and you get Shrek doing the story stuff there. As he's basically talking about how they fucked so much, they created a huge mess.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, fun times there. So I'll be working my way through the rest of these here, but I believe my next one is at Shrek's swamp, so I'm looking forward to cleaning that up. So there you go for that front. And yeah, the last one, Metaphor Refantasio. I think we've all played this. I don't know where I am at regarding the demo, but because I did not play it, about 8 hours in or so. Basically got my third official member of the team after we kind of awakened sort of his Hulkenberg's you know, powers, essentially, and gone back to the tavern to hang out and rest up for a night. Which is good, because the person you had previous to that, I was like, oh, this spending, you know, the mag currency to unlock the one power for them, that then you basically don't really use them much after that. And I was like, is this person going away, or are they going to become part of the party? And figured it out pretty quickly. No, they are, let's say, going to take a break. They're going to be disappearing from this game. And so, yeah, you get this other person, which I was pretty sure was going to become a part of the party because they're one of the first, like, different looking people you see as, like, an elf-like character that has red hair. You see them, I think, at the very beginning of the game. She just happens to be on the carriage that you are using to ride into the kingdom before you get, like, weirdly pushed off a cliff.
Yeah.
Over a book that you're holding. And, yeah. Enjoying it a lot so far. It is very Persona
in a lot of ways. Oh, goodness, yes.
I thought I heard it wasn't going to be as much of this, but like the main thing that I would say differentiates it is that there's no real Persona system to it. You essentially just have these series of jobs that are part of your skill system, essentially, that dictate a lot of that. And now they've introduced the ability to inherit skills from other jobs. So, I assume that gets increased as you go, but the way that they pull those out is probably partly story-based, as well as just getting further in your bonds with different characters and leveling up the previous job to its max. I think that's what all the ones I've seen so far. Like, you have to get level 20 with this, and then X level with this person, and then you'll unlock this next one. Which makes it seem like, oh, this is gonna be a while to unlock these things. It's not necessarily like the amount of personas you would see within your first dungeon or two that you can catch as cards. That's not really as much of a thing, especially because it costs money, magic money, to unlock those for each character. So they discourage you from just swapping back and forth, at least early on. You want to kind of ride it out with one of the jobs for a while till either a new one shows up or you max it out and are ready for a new one. But yeah, it's an interesting change up here. Makes it less like a, you know, Persona or Pokemon kind of game, and more like a classic style RPG with a job system here. Combat system is mostly Persona, other than the way that they show how the weakness stuff works is different, whereas before you'd just be like, oh, you just get to go again, whereas here you see these crystals that mm-hmm. are representative of the turns you have.
Yep.
And as you exploit a weakness, you get like a half crystal that you can use for a full turn anyway, but then they've introduced this synthesis ability, which allows you to use two people's crystals for a special attack of some kind, as well as for use of MP as well. So you're not just using up the crystals. I think the other thing that's a bit different is that when characters level up, not only do you not refill like your health and mana all the way, you get to put one point in your stats. Mm-hmm. You get one automatic one that you put in for your main character. I think everybody on your the rest of your party just gets two automatic that are picked out for you. So that's very Persona-like, but yeah, it's a pretty cool game so far. Story stuff is pretty interesting. It is the main concern so far throughout this game has been racism. A big part of this is that most of the people in this kingdom are part of one of these eight tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some classism and racism inherent to each of them.
Yep.
Some are more of the ruling class that has for people that get respect most of the time. And then there are those on the lower end. One is this tribe that is like or dog style humans that have ears, and they are treated very poorly. They're pretty much on the bottom from what I've seen. And your main character is part of the ninth tribe that is not even recognized as a tribe.
Yep.
Because they're the church, the main church hates them and essentially just rules that they're not an actual tribe.
Yeah.
Essentially, the Eldas, which are the most human-like, I guess, because they don't really have any features that on the outward appearance stand out from humans.
So far, the only one I've seen so far is like he has like heterochromia, but that's about it.
Yeah, you haven't seen any others, so you don't know if that's like a trait inherent to them or just this one person. But yeah, you get a lot of people, sort of like Persona 5, you have like little bubbles that pop up of text of like people talking about you or things going on or whatever. And you get some that are like, ew, they're an Elda. This problem's all your fault. Well, this person just exists, so I don't know how they're the cause of any of this problems, but okay. So that's like a core conceit. And the other one is a basic conspiracy of the king that has just been killed. So I think as people in the kingdom knows that he's dead, but you're part of the resistance that knows that he has been killed, most likely by this character that is sort of, I don't know if he's the head of the king's army or what particular position he holds, but his name is Luis. Was somebody who was very adept with strategy, war strategy, and all that as a young age, and kind of was brought up in the kingdom, in the king's party, you know, and he uses that for his own gain and kills the king and his heir. And as far as anybody knows, both of them are dead, but as part of the resistance, you know that the heir has been saved, taken out of the kingdom. You learn exactly the details of what happened. He gets a curse put on him, and he is under the care of the resistance, who has him in sort of a stable position, but the curse will kill him at some point if they cannot find somebody that can break it. And it's been 12 years since then, so he's been legally declared dead, but the Resistance still is fighting for some sort of hope for this. But where I'm at, basically, we are now in the point where you have a deadline to resolve this conflict, or Luis will become king.
Yep.
For a whole wild sequence. Because, yeah, it's the weird thing they introduced really early on is that the king has this weird power that supposedly they lead you to believe would prevent him from being able to be stabbed or anything like that, but somehow Luis gets past that.
Mm-hmm.
And he has other tricks up his sleeve, not to spoil anything, but the method for which they go through this is pretty interesting and basically sets a course for you've got, you know, a couple of weeks here to solve this problem or else everybody's fucked.
Kingdom. Yep.
And so, yeah, that's kind of where I am at. But yeah, it seems very cool so far, very nice style to it. A lot of the same stuff that Persona has been doing. You got a lot of equivalents, like your equivalent of the Velvet Room is the Academia area. And your Igor equivalent is a man named Moore, and not spelled the way you think. It's spelled like the word M-O-R-E, Moore, because he is the author of the book that your character is holding.
Yeah,
which is a banned book by the church because it is a fantasy book, which means that in this setting, means it is basically telling a story of like modern day, like New York City.
Yeah, or at least a really fantastical, idealized version of it.
Yeah, I haven't seen too much of what's in this book other than there's cars and people and no magic and that kind of stuff. But the church has deemed this such a blasphemy book that they've ordered all copies to be destroyed, and our character happens to have one and carries it around, you know, openly at some point. So you're like, oh, this is a banned book. This is a dumb idea, boy. You should not be doing this, which is part of the reason he gets thrown down a cliff at the beginning of the game.
Yep.
Because one of the bandits seems to recognize it as some sort and tries to grab it from you, and your guy just like, no, I'm holding on this, and before that guy gets stabbed, you get thrown off the cliff with the book. So, you know, fun times. I'd say the other like big difference with the Persona games is that you have more action going on between battles.
Oh, yeah.
You have the ability to not only like swing your sword at enemies to initiate combat, but you get time to break down their like shield. Meter that gives you the advantage in the battle versus just getting one attack, one hit on them. But if you get hit by them, they can get the advantage. And you have like a whatever, like a fairy view that you show up, you use that can highlight enemies in colors. They're like, oh, these are weak, so you can just kill them outright without having to fight them, or if they're on your level or above your level to avoid them, that kind of stuff. So, yeah. That's kind of it. But, yeah, it's been very cool so far. So, yeah, what have you been doing, Brandon?
Well, I finished my playthrough and I finished my review of Renatus, which probably should be up on the website in the next couple of days. But long story short, the game turned out to be just really, really mediocre. It had a lot of, I mean, it had like a pedigree behind it. It was, you know, the scenario was written by the guy who wrote, you know, a bunch of the Final Fantasy games. The soundtrack was composed by the woman who does the music for Kingdom Hearts. And it had a lot of it going for it, but it's like somewhere along the line, it's like they completely ran out of money. And so they had to try and power through to get this thing out there. And the result is it shows. First and foremost, none of the character models emote like at all. They barely even blink. And this is very obvious during the points where, you know, they're, you know, the voice actors are actually like putting efforts into their performance, but the character models just do not show it because they look like puppets pretty much. And, you know, there is a point like towards the end where it's like they realize they had this like big loophole that they had to find some way to finish up with. And so there's this sort of like 11th hour twist that they barely even hint at until the very end. And it's like, what the hell? But yeah, there was a lot about that game. I wanted to like it because it had so much potential, but the end result was just, it wasn't terrible. It ended up being very mid in general.
Yeah, man, tough to hear that. I'll be editing your review so that it'll go up tomorrow. I want to ask is how long it took you to... So did you actually play through the whole thing, or...?
Yeah, I played through the whole thing.
Okay.
And it roughly... I mean, keep in mind, I'm also a fast reader. Gotcha. So I can breeze through like a lot of like tech stuff very quickly than a lot of other people.
Yeah, I mean, like this was a game that I was definitely interested in coming in. You know, I played it at Anime Expo. I played a demo build there, and at first I didn't like it. But the main reason why was because I was playing it on Switch, and it just like didn't really perform well. And then I played it again on PS5, and I liked it a whole lot better, especially since I actually figured out how the battle system worked. You know, like you got to put on the hood. And to like get your mana back, and all of a sudden you take it off and you become like this badass. And the demo ends when you start to meet other characters. So like, I'm wondering how that turns out. But yeah, so anyway, as I was asking, like, how long did it take you roughly, like as far as hours go?
Let's see. It took, I think, roughly about 30 to 40, I think.
Okay.
But you know, that's kind of an estimate more than anything else. Gotcha. But yeah. And there's also like, after you finish the main story, there is like this sort of, I'm convinced that they were originally going to make this like DLC or something until they realized like towards the end, it's like, oh wow, we are absolutely polishing a turd here. So there's like some additional stuff at the end you can get, but it's like you have to be like at a certain level in order to do it well, and it's not much better than what the rest of the game is. But yeah, it was one of those games that had so much potential going for it, and I there was a lot, there were parts of it I did genuinely like. You know, the combat system actually was like one of the bright spots for it. And you know that, and like the world building they were doing, which, you know, I mean, it when I first started the game and they're like bringing out like, you know, they're called wizards and all that, I'm like, this is kind of stupid. And then they actually build it up and it's like, oh no, actually this is a lot more involved than I thought it was going to be. And then it's just, but the actual way that the game conveys it is just, it's so mid, it really is. But yeah, that was pretty much my experience with it.
That's definitely the experience I've had with a bunch of other of Furyu's RPGs. Like the last one they released was The Legend of Legacy HD Remastered. People love that game. I absolutely hate it because I just think the battle system is terrible. Cry Machina is actually pretty fun, but it's shorter than it should be.
Yeah,
Monarch is rough. So yeah, like, you know, this was shaping up to be their best one, but at the same time, it also isn't saying much.
Yeah, it was. I will say this, if this was like a PlayStation 2 game back in the day, it probably would have been better received. But, you know, we're in the PS5 era, and like, it just doesn't measure up. But anyway, other than that, my gaming time has primarily been occupied by Metaphor ReFantazio, and Chris already kind of went a good deal into, you know, how the game works. I'm further along than he is because I played the demo earlier before I got the actual game. But so like we make all of these Persona comparisons, which is fairly apt because a lot of the game's mechanics are heavily based in you know, the Persona series. One of the big things about the games that everybody knows about the Persona games is the time management stuff, because you've only, you know, you've got all these things you want to do, but you've only got so much time you can do it. And pretty much the same way happens here too. If you, you know, if you're going to like, oh, I'm going to go do an activity, it might take you the whole afternoon. And then, you know, nighttime comes around and there's stuff you got to do then, stuff like that. But what there's an extra layer that's built it into it here in the in Metaphor, because unlike in the Persona games where you're largely you know, staying in like a single area more or less, like Persona 5, you're mostly in Tokyo. In Metaphor, you're actually traveling most of the time, and in the thing about that is, even though you're still like on a schedule where like you have to do a certain thing before a certain time period or it's game over, because you're traveling, you have to take into account like the amount of time it's going to take to get there. And this is further complicated by the fact that depending on how the weather is, it might take you longer to get to a certain area than it would previously. And also the weather actually like directly affects the behavior of the enemies you'll encounter in the game. Fortunately though, when it's like, you don't really have to worry about that kind of thing when you're traveling back though, because as it happens, the machine that you're traveling around is the Gauntlet Runner, as it's called. Has a teleportation mechanic built into it so that you can basically go right back to any major hub city that you have traveled to. So, you know, once you get it, you only have to worry about that, which is good. Even at this part of the game, where I'm still fairly early into the whole, tournament for the throne thing, they're still throwing in some serious like plot curveballs here and there that are pretty. It is like, I'll just like, yeah, the writing is so damn good. Even comparing it to Persona, the Persona 5 in particular, where the writing was really good. It had some areas that were kind of stupid. Not here. Pretty much the entire way I've gone through, I have been very impressed by how this story is going. And yeah, it's really good. Chris mentioned, yeah, this game basically does have its own version of the Velvet Room. It's called Academia and it's run by this guy named Moore. And he pretty much like does the same function that Igor does. You know, it's pretty cool. He's actually the guy that is the author of the book that, you know, the player character is carrying around, like Chris mentioned. There's so much that this game is suggesting that the way this plot can go. And I'm very interested to see where it's going to go. And what's also interesting is all of the like commentary that all of the characters have. When they're like, because there's a bunch of parts in the game where when you've got like these new members in your party, you know, they'll come across you when you're going through the book and they'll ask to go through it and they'll look at it and they'll commentate about it. And occasionally they'll make some remarks that you would expect. And then others are surprisingly apt. There's this one part where there's this one character you get, he's like the third person you get into your party named Heimdallr, and he looks through the book and he makes up the point, like, you know, equal competition doesn't mean equal footing. And that, you know, all this other stuff, it's far more mature than you would expect an Atlas RPG to be. Let me put it that way. But yeah, that's basically what I've been playing. So Danrib, what about you?
Yeah, I wasn't on the show last week because I was traveling to LA for a football game. But yeah, I've definitely been doing my share of gaming, especially since we're in that part of the year where It's super overwhelming now. I also started my new job a couple of weeks ago, and that's definitely eaten into my time, which when what you're playing is mainly RPGs, you're just not going to have time to do it all that, especially when you're going to balance them. So anyway, I also am playing Metaphor: Refantasio, and to be upfront about it, I've actually had the game since last Monday, but I didn't actually put any real time in until Friday, and then going into today. I only have about 3 hours into the game, so everyone's been talking about the demo, and the demo is something I've never touched. So like as far as like how far the demo gets, I have no idea. But I will say that so far it's starting off a little slow. And kind of expected that, especially coming from Persona. Like obviously we're gonna have a lot of the Persona comparisons, but at the same time, this is supposed to be something completely new. And it definitely feels that way, but you definitely see some of the Persona language into it. Like, we already talked about the calendar system and things like that. But, just going from day to day and seeing like the way the characters are animated and sitting like, at the campfire and things like that, I'm like, yeah, this is totally Persona through and through. But, something that Brandon just touched upon is that this feels a whole lot more mature. And I think that's going to be key with the Metaphor: Refantasio going into it because, with Persona, they're kind of stuck with high school kids, with Metaphor: Refantasio, you're dealing with people who are a whole lot older. And then when you go back to Persona, it's like, the oldest people there are going to be like people's parents or like, some guy in college or a professor or things of that nature. Whereas with Metaphor: Refantasio, you're dealing with like, older people, you have kings and things like that. And yeah, I haven't gotten anywhere near that deep. I'm in this, I don't even know if it's a dungeon. It's more of like a way to prepare you for all the battles and stuff. I just beat like this crow boss using primarily ice magic and like the heavy attack that Stroll does. And yeah, like I'm enjoying it. It's very Persona to me so far, but it hasn't exactly clicked yet. I've seen a lot of the things that you were talking about as far as more being like the new Igor and things like that. But yeah, I just my feet aren't wet enough to really have an opinion of where I'm going, but I am enjoying it so far. And me being the Persona fan that I am, I look forward to playing more of it as we move forward. One of the main games that has my attention right now is The Legend of Zelda: Echoes of Wisdom. I've been playing it since release, and yeah, it's been a little bit of a slow burn for me just because of my lack of time. But as for where I am, I've gotten to a point where I've beaten the initial few dungeons, and then something happens where the game pretty much opens up from there. And a lot of what I've talked about in the past, or just about anybody who's played the game would tell you, like this game is pretty much supposed to be Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom in 2D form. And yeah, it's really opened up to that point now. I'm sure a lot of the viewers have seen like videos or memes of Zelda using a bed to get just about anywhere. Like the bed has pretty much become the wooden plank from Tears of the Kingdom to build bridges. And yeah, it's pretty cool to see. And the one thing that I had trouble getting used to was the fact that so because your main sense of combat is by using the echoes and all of their abilities. Early on in the game, you also pretty much have the ability to like channel Link and use his abilities, and basically, have the bow and arrow and the sword, and basically, it's like a temporary power up. So when you want to be Link, it'll last like 15 seconds at max. So you usually want to use it when you're in a tight situation where you don't have that many hearts, and you have all these enemies to kill, and like your echoes aren't doing the job. That's when you want to bust them out. And one thing that I didn't realize is that Link actually has a higher jump than Zelda, and that's actually changed a lot of the ways that I tried to do a lot of puzzles. There's also like sort of a, it's not really an exploit, but for example, if you're using if you bring a bed out and then you have the tornado echo, you can jump on the bed and use the tornado to all of a sudden have the bed fly backwards. And that's been a way to like, sort of get into higher places a lot faster. So that's going to be interesting to see as far as a speed running standpoint. But yeah, like I've gotten to a point where at the very beginning, Zelda's wearing a cloak, and the reason why she's wearing the cloak is because she is hiding. Eventually, like she, there's a point in the game where you come out of hiding, and she is the princess. So it's really cool just going to all the villages and towns and talking to people saying, oh yeah, like you're the princess. You know, we're so used to the swordsman hero helping us out, but it's good to know that, you know, someone who's actually in charge of Hyrule is helping us out. And, you know, especially in an election year, it's like, oh, is this sort of a political move? Probably not, but it's just the way, like, I think these days, especially with a Metaphor also being a heavily political game. But yeah, it's also been cool seeing just the way these characters were developed for this 2D screen. Like, I don't remember. I mean, yeah, it probably was in what's it called? The 3DS is all the game. I forgot what. Link Between Worlds. I didn't know if Gorons or Zoras were there. So with this game, we definitely see both Zoras. We have the Zoras of the Sea, which you see from Ocarina of Time and Breath of the Wild, and all of a sudden you see the land Zoras, who are usually in creeks and ponds, and they're green. You know, they show up in Link to the Past, and all of a sudden there's an argument between the two. You see Gorons, you see Garudas, you see Deku Scrubs. So yeah, like meeting a lot of these characters has actually been pretty awesome. There isn't anybody like as powerful like as the sages from like previous Zelda games, but seeing the little stories that they have has really shown like how much this series has grown, and like that makes this entry a whole lot more impressive as a result, because you know this is actually the first Zelda game where Shigeru Miyamoto is not recognized in the credits. This game was fully developed by Grezzo, who has primarily done like Zelda remakes. And yeah, like if Grezzo is going to be the sole proprietor of all the 2D Zeldas moving forward, I'm excited. Like this game combines everything that you can like from a 2D Zelda, especially since real dungeons are back, except that you don't have the hidden item of every dungeon to solve the whole dungeon, but at the same time just using your creativity based on the things that you do have really make it a whole lot better. And yeah, there's been a lot of the complaints about things like performance. I haven't seen them, but I've also only played via handheld. I don't know if it's via TV or not, but yeah, there's that. And then yeah, the main reason why I haven't been playing a whole lot of Metaphor is because I've been playing another RPG that comes out much later. It's East 10 Nordics, so I'm allowed to talk about it now, assuming that we're posting and when we're supposed to. But yeah, East 10 Nordics. Latest game out of Falcom, latest East game. The main thing with this one is that it is sort of the second or third one in the series, I believe, because this game actually takes place after he leaves where he was supposed to go in the first game. And let's see here, I'm trying to remember. So this takes place in what's called the Obelia Gulf. And basically, there's a whole lot of pirates and things like that. And you meet this character named Carja, and she is the pirate princess. And she represents the Normans. And basically, these are people that sort of like threaten existence in the Obelia Gulf because like people aren't in love with the way they do business. And yeah, like it also turns out that they've also sort of been like the main purveyors for trade in that part of the ocean. And yeah, like as far as like this game goes, for once, Adol does not end up getting shipwrecked. He actually just, ends up in a situation where he has to fight pirates and, various other enemies. And what happens in this game is he all of a sudden is he has mana, which allows him to beat up on these enemies called the Grigor. And regular people can't kill Griggers at all. When they try to do that, they end up reviving themselves. But if you're a mana user, you're able to, kill them for good. And basically, he and Carja share that mana power, but they're also sort of like chained together. So the thing with this game is that you'll be traversing the world using both Adol and Carja, and they're like bound together. They can't leave each other. So if they were to try to separate, the band wouldn't let them, and they just like be closer together as a result. So you're seeing a lot of cool dynamics between Adol and this new character, and it's definitely really easy to or basically they do a really good job with that connection and the chemistry. Now the main thing with this game is that I haven't been too impressed with a whole lot of the changes they made, especially coming out of both East 8 and East 9. With East 10, they pretty much get rid of the block and dodge buttons, and they've given you the ability to dash, and that's done with the left shoulder button. And basically the idea here is, for example, if you're running at a line of bullets, if you're holding L, that means you'll be able to dodge them all. But at the same time, when it comes to oncoming strikes, you're expected to dodge at the perfect moment. And the lack of ability to, you know, shield yourself from damage really makes it hard. I've gone through every boss fight dying at least once each time, and the East series has never been this difficult to me. So I'm just having trouble, like, really grasping this battle system, just because I've been so used to what I played with East 9 and 10. Aside from that, though, like, the story is actually really well done. I think it was actually led by Toshihiro Kondo all along, so it's definitely cool seeing this. This is a younger Adol. He's 17 years old. This takes place, like, right before or as he's leaving for Salsetta. So it's definitely cool to see there. But I'm about 18 hours in right now. I've heard that this game is about 25 hours. East games aren't typically all that long. The reason why they become long is because there's a lot of content to look out for, as opposed to just story. The other thing with this game is that sailing is a thing, and that's pretty much the main way you traverse to and from different islands. And along with the sailing, they also have ship battles, and the ship battles are actually pretty fun. You know, you have a certain loadout that you can prepare for, certain cannons, certain weapons and stuff. But the lack of ability to really level up your ship, aside from just, you know, giving it better abilities, makes it a little bit difficult, because the main thing is you just want to make sure that you have a lot of money. When you have all the money, you can go ahead and upgrade, you know, the various points of your ship. And the reason why, like, I'm not wholly in love with it is because the sea doesn't really feel like the sea. It just feels like a whole bunch of zones. And, like, this is something that you'll know from the Trails games, Brandon. Like, you know how if you wanted to leave town, like, the gateway out is, like, marked by a bunch of dots. Mm-hmm. Like, in East, each zone in the sea is made that way. So it's mm-hmm. like, even though the map shows that, oh, you can go ahead and traverse here, it's like, all right, we can't sail past here because of X thing happening. And it just kind of takes you away from the action. And
it just
makes me wonder why they even decided to do it this way. But, you know, I understand technical limitations, but, you know, this is the PS5, so we really shouldn't have that kind of problem. But yeah, like, it's a good game. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it a whole lot more than East 9. But, like, a lot of the changes they've made to the gameplay just really feel archaic as a result. And that's going to affect, like, my score going in. But at the end of the day, like, I'm happy to know that, you know, we're going back to being more exploratory as at all. Like, my main gripe with East 9 was that everything was, like, central to that castle town and that castle. And, like, you really couldn't do much. Whereas here, like, you know, you're going through a whole bunch of worlds. You have different means of travel. You know, I already mentioned the ship, but at the same time, like, you have abilities such as, like, the hookshot to get you to certain areas, making it feel more action-y. The platforming feels a little rough, but at the same time, like, it's still fun to do, and it definitely adds to the overall gameplay. So that's something I'm liking. But, yeah, East 10's a lot of fun, but it's... At the end of the day, I'm pretty sure it's going to pale in comparison to Metaphor ReFantazio, and I hate to make the comparison, but at the same time, like, they come out the same month, so this is inevitably going to happen. Aside from that, I also played and finished Neva. This game is developed by the same folks who developed Gris, and Gris is not a game I played, so I have no recollection of anything that ever happened in that game, but this game was, I believe it was first shown during Summer Game Fest this year. And basically, it's a quest about you and, like, this sort of dog slash deer. I say dog slash deer because, like, the dog has antlers, very much similar to the great spirit from Princess Mononoke. And, like, what really sets this game apart for me, especially in the animation side, is... I'm pretty sure, like, a whole lot of this was inspired by Studio Ghibli projects. Like, this dog, again, reminds me of that spirit from Princess Mononoke. You deal with a whole lot of shadows and, you know, dark figures in combat that look a whole lot like No Face from Spirited Away. At the same time, like the way that the game paints the picture of things like wind and grass is definitely something ingrained from anime. But yeah, this game is absolutely beautiful. At the same time, it's really short. At first, it plays out like a walking simulator. But eventually, like, it gets to a point where it teaches you how to platform, and the platforming is fantastic. Like, you have a regular jump, you have a double jump. Eventually, you'll have the ability to do a dash with your jump, so you can jump further. And then on top of that, you have your combat, and then so your main character has a sword. And yeah, most enemies take around 2 to 3 hits to kill. And when things die in this game, even death is beautiful. So for example, like when you die, all of a sudden like these ivy and plants just sprout out of your body. Like it's both gross and like nice to look at the same times. But at the same time, it's like when you die yourself, it's like, oh no, that's gross. But yeah, like what the real thing that really captures my attention with this game is that you play the game along the course of a year through seasons. Each level is a part of a season. So for example, the first level is like summer part one, and then there's summer part two, and then fall, and then winter, and then spring. And with each passing season, your dog slash deer or whatever you want to call it grows. So at the very beginning of the game, it's a puppy, and then all of a sudden it's a much more mature dog who can actually be useful in combat. And then all of a sudden it becomes someone or something that you can ride and traverse through the worlds that way. And yeah, like it's a really fun experience. At the same time, it's also really it's really sad. It's really emotional. I'm not going to say what happens, but again, like it's all beautiful in that regard. It's exactly what you expect, out of a publisher like Devolver. And yeah, it was really fun. And the game is only about 5 hours too. If you want to platinum it and get the collectibles, you can do that too. If I had any sort of like complaint, I do feel like the levels are a little long. But at the same time, it's like just seeing the levels progress with how beautiful it is really matters. The puzzle mechanics are really cool, and yeah, just an overall fun game to play that I definitely wholeheartedly recommend in a really crowded month. But yeah, that's been about it, and I can't wait to dive more into Metaphor when we're all said and done with this month.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. Particularly, we have a new PlayStation Plus game catalog for people with extra and premium tiers, as they've announced a bunch of stuff here. So let's go. For PS5 and PS4, there's Dead Island 2. So if you missed that out from last year, I think it was. You can check that out for some zombie killing first person action stuff. Let's see, for PS5 and PS4, Two Point Campus, another one of their sort of tycoon management games, but instead of the hospital like the first game, it is a campus now. You're managing the campus for a university that can do a lot of wild stuff. So there you go for that one. Also for PS5 and PS4, the Dark Pictures Anthology, The Devil and Me. That is the, I want to say like the third or fourth one of these that they put out. So yeah, you can check that out. Play solo for Halloween or with friends, whatever way works for you. But there you go for that. That's one of your Halloween games. Also for PS5 and PS4, Gris. So if you have not played that, that's a chance to actually check it out for that one. Let's see, for PS5, Return to Monkey Island. If you like your adventure games, that one is a very good one of these. Follows the story, continues the story from the first two games in this series, The Secret of Monkey Island and Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge, which are both great. We're checking out if you can. And this third one pays a lot of love and attention to the universe and all the cool stuff about it. So that one's worth checking out. So there you go. Yeah, for PS5 and PS4, Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed. This is the 4v1 multiplayer game. So you can play that with friends for some more Halloween fun. And let's see, also for PS5 and PS4, Firefighting Simulator, The Squad. It's another one of these, but set around a firefighting team.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, might check that one out. See how that goes, but yeah, there's that. For PS5, Overpass 2. This is a racing game, I think just off-road racing game. So yeah, you can check that one out. PS5 and PS4, mm-hmm. Tour de France 2023. Another one of these ones.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, for PS4, Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Wildlands is returning. So you can check that one out. The first of these big open world Ghost Recon games that is probably the better one from other than Breakpoint. So there you go for that. For premium, let's see. The PSVR 2 game is The Last Clockwinder. That is a big puzzle game, so that's a fun one to check out if you have PSVR 2. As for the classics here, for the PS1, Dino Crisis. So unsurprisingly, they're putting that up for Halloween. So there you go on that front. For the PS2, Siren, which fits with Silent Hill 2's remake just happening, releasing last week. Siren is the follow-up from the creator of Silent Hill. He moved over to Sony and had a new team that worked on his own new franchise, which was Siren. He made a few games in that franchise before making Gravity Rush. So yeah, there's that. And for PS4, R-Type Dimensions EX. This is the collection that has R-Type 1 and 2 in a little bundle thing where you can play through all the stages from both games and the original 2D graphics and new 3D graphics for that. So if you enjoy your shmups, that's another solid game to check out. So but yeah, there you go. There's your lineup. Some pretty cool stuff. So there you go.
All right. Sounds good.
Let's see. Let's get to some dates. This one's a sad one. Little Big Planet 3 is finally getting its miserable last few years ended with the delisting on October 31st on Halloween.
Yep.
So if you have not purchased that yet and want it to check it out, that's one you can grab here in the last couple of weeks. Yeah, this game's just had a bunch of issues over the last couple of years as they've had a bunch of server issues and haven't been able to get that fixed at all. So ended up shutting down the servers earlier this year. And similarly, as a result, they have now going to be delisting the game. So yeah, even if you get it, you won't have access to all the user levels that people have made. Unfortunately, but you can grab the game itself and play through the campaign and all that. So there you go.
All right. Yeah. Sad to hear it go, but.
So I'm a little confused. If you had the physical version, can you still play it or is it just done?
Yep. You should be able to play it just fine.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely tough to hear. I did read that it's one of the gateways into how the, how PSN gets hacked in the first place, so that definitely sucks to hear. But especially if you were somebody that was in the LBP3 community, which, you know, there aren't that many now, but at the same time, it's like that game is still not all that old, should still be up, especially since we don't know if LBP will continue. But yeah, it's rough.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. We do have a date for The Rise of the Golden Idol that people have been looking forward to. That'll be out on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC, as well as Netflix on iOS and Android on November 12th. So about a month away. That's cool. The first game, The Case of the Golden Idol, is a fantastic little adventure game. I'm looking forward to this one. This is set in more of a modern era in the 1970s. So.
Yep.
That'll be fun to see that art style played out in an interesting time.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that'll be fun. Let's see. Yeah, Anton Blast. I believe that was supposed to be out November 12th. They have delayed it to December 3rd. Citing impacts on the game's development team by Hurricanes Helene and Milton. So I assume they have most of their team in Florida. So that's good that they seem to be all right. So luckily people won't have to wait too much more to get the game, about an extra month. So there you go for that. So, yeah.
All right.
That's fun. But yeah, getting to some more news. Tetris Forever is coming out later this year. They've put out a new trailer that shows off all the games that are in it. So we have finally a full list of the 15 games that are in this. There is, let's see, Tetris, which was, this is the original version released by Pajanov in 1984 on the Electronica 60.
Yep.
That's a Russian computer, so.
Famous story about that. He basically, like, all the other folks would, like, download the program and add it to their computers, and it actually caused, like, a legit, like, work slowdown at the government foundation he was working at. He actually had to get like a talking to from like the foreman. It was funny.
So you have that version. There's the Spectrum Holobyte version from 1988 on the Apple II. And the other version of Tetris is the Famicom version, released by Bulletproof Software in 1988. And yeah, a lot of these, most of the rest of these are all released by Bulletproof Software. They're the reason you have these. There's Tetris from 1990 on the Famicom. Tetris 2 plus Bombless. This is the 1990 release on the Famicom. Then there's Tetris for the Game Boy in 1991. Tetris on the NES in 1992. Super Tetris 2 plus Bombless for the Super Famicom in 1992. Tetris Battle Gaiden for the Super Famicom in 1993. That is a multiplayer Tetris game that is pretty cool. Has elements of, I don't know what you might liken it to from back then. But yeah, you kind of have these different characters that have their own like special abilities that can screw over the other player or help yourself. Jam, that kind of stuff. Let's see, Super Tetris 2 plus Bombless Gente Ben for the Super Famicom in 1993. Super Tetris 3 for the Super Famicom in 1994. Super Bombless for the Game Boy in 1995. Super Bombless for the Super Famicom in 1995. And Super Bombless DX for the Game Boy in 1998. And then yeah, the new game they've made is Tetris Forever. Or no, the Tetris Time Warp is the new one that they've developed that features a way for you to switch, or you get warped through different eras of Tetris. Experience a dynamic mix of graphics, playstyles, and mechanics in real time. So that's cool. And along with that, there's a big documentary thing that you can work your way through and check it out. And learn more about the history of Tetris and all that. So, that seems like it's going to be a really cool collection. Now we're just waiting on a date. But that's supposed to be later this year, so we'll be able to check it out soon enough. But then we got some Aspyr news. They announced two new remasters this week. Both that are a bit interesting choices. So they're continuing the Star Wars remasters, but maybe not with one of the games you might expect.
Nope.
Or no, really. They're picking Star Wars Episode One: Jedi Power Battles. This was sort of a beat-em-up / platformer kind of game that came out for the PS1, Dreamcast, and maybe PC as well. That was all right for what it was, but yeah, they're releasing this on January 23rd of next year. For $20 on PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. Seems like it'll have some revamped controls. They're going to unlock all the characters from the beginning, all levels unlocked, and the versus and training modes introduced in later releases of the game. Two-player couch co-op, and some more stuff added into it. So that's cool. Though I would not have made this a priority over a bunch of other games in the series that they could have brought out.
Mm-hmm.
Like a number of the like combat games, like the Starfighter series,
mm-hmm.
Or even Rogue Squadron. Though I know some of that there might be some rights issues with that. Nintendo might have some rights to that stuff. I don't know, but some other games. But maybe at this point they're going to go into like Bombad Racing.
Yeah,
or some junk like that.
Yeah, it's really interesting seeing like what kind of Star Wars properties Aspyr actually has. Because like, yeah, they've been releasing a lot of cool ones that I've known throughout my childhood. At the same time, they've also been releasing a lot of ones that I've never heard of in my life, including this one. Yeah. What I want to see is Shadows of the Empire. I remember playing that on my N64 and not knowing what I was doing.
Oh yeah.
It was hard.
Same.
Yeah, it's I'm trying to see if there were any other releases of that. Let me see. Yeah, here's the wiki for that. Let's see. Doesn't seem like it. Just a Nintendo 64 release, then a PC release a little bit later than that. So that one has not had a remaster yet, but maybe. But yeah, they're working their way through some of these prequel trilogy games.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe picking some of the lesser ones. But there you go for that one. Their other one is a continuation of their Tomb Raider trilogy remastering. This time, Tomb Raider 4 through 6, which is an interesting choice in name because like only the fourth one was given a number. The others were not. This includes Tomb Raider, The Last Revelation, Tomb Raider Chronicles, and Tomb Raider, The Angel of Darkness for the PS2, the latter of which is probably the worst game in the series.
Mm-hmm.
It was a game that was to be like the next generation of the series. Huge improvement in graphics and all that. They were even talking at a certain point that it might be like an episodic game.
Mm-hmm.
That they might release it in, parts somehow. But yeah, it ended up being a troubled development, and they ended up just kind of cutting what they couldn't finish and putting the game out. And it was just kind of a poor release, very buggy, very rough around the edges. Had some interesting ideas because I believe it has like an XP system for depending on how much you're doing your different abilities, like pushing stuff around and jumping and all that. You'll get a bit better at that stuff. That kind of stuff, but yeah, it's a game that's infamous very much.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. I've never actually played any of the classic Tomb Raider games. I've heard a lot of mixed reviews about them, but for this ladder,
yeah, I wouldn't bother. They really do not hold up well, at all.
This ladder trilogy, obviously, is obviously critically panned. But at the same time, I do appreciate companies like Aspyr going ahead and bringing them out, no matter how bad they were. Just to, as just a reminder of like how far we've come, especially compared to the modern day trilogy, which, it's not exactly like beloved, but to me was very strong. I played all those games and loved them all. And, I wonder when the next one is coming. I think Amazon has the rights to it, and I don't know who's going to like be developing it. But Lara Croft and Tomb Raider are really important for the industry as a whole. Maybe not for the right reasons, but at the same time, there have been good games. So it makes me hopeful. I don't know if the future will be tied to how well these games do, but at the same time, this is also a win for, sort of like acknowledging history.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was looking at the different games on their wiki page just to remember what they are. And yeah, Last Revelations, like the a legit fourth game. Chronicles is a weird game because it is kind of Lara is presumed dead and her friends are sort of remembering her early adventures. So it's kind of like a greatest hits of her early stuff. I don't know if it's levels from the other games or whatever, but I remember that being kind of a weird release that people weren't really happy with. I was also like, yeah, this is kind of getting old at a certain point, because that came out, I want to say, yeah, this came out after the PS2 launched, November of 2000. It also came out on the Dreamcast, so kind of getting a little bit of a better version there, so I assume that's the version they would use for this collection. But yeah, they're doing a bunch of extra stuff, you know, the modern graphics, toggle stuff, modern controls, photo modes, quality of life features, and all that kind of stuff. So that'll be interesting, mostly for what they're doing to the Angel of Darkness to make it not a piece of shit. So we'll have to see how that goes, but that'll be out February 14th. As they jump right into that mess of February games that is amassing early next year. Much like this next game, Data Everything, which has been delayed to February 14th, 2025. Supposed to be out, I think, the 24th, yeah, October 24th. So that was coming up pretty soon, and they've said that they need some more time, so they are pushing it to February, and best of luck to them putting out that kind of game and the barrage of stuff that is happening in February. So best of luck to them. I would suggest maybe don't set your heart on that date. Maybe push a little further. put out in March. But they're going for the 14th, I assume, for Valentine's Day ties that, but also it doesn't have to be that date. So. But there you go. That one had to wait a little bit longer. But then let's get to our big Nintendo hardware news. They finally revealed their next piece of hardware. It is the Nintendo Alarmo. Technically, the full name, I think, is Nintendo Sound Clock Alarmo. That will be out early next year for $99.99. You can purchase it now, I guess, if you have a Nintendo Switch Online membership. It's also available now at the Nintendo New York store with no NSO membership required for that. They describe it as a themed interactive alarm clock. It basically looks like your kind of classic styled alarm clock, round alarm clock with a big button on top with an LCD screen on it. That shows the time, the dates, maybe a few different icons for the various other features it has themed around different games. I think it's five games. Breath of the Wild, Splatoon 3, there's Mario, Pikmin 4, and Ring Fit Adventure are the main themes that they have. You can set your times. I don't know if it has a range of options for that stuff. I assume it does for more times it can hold. You can have it do an hourly chime if you want. You can have it have a steady or gentle mode for your morning alarm, whether it's loud from the start or kind of starts lower and gradually gets louder. But it also has options for having to hit the button or using the like sonar stuff that it has to tell that you have gotten up and stop fucking with you, I guess, for that. But yeah, it's a very expensive alarm. As well, it is the Q&A reveals humorously that it doesn't work well with two people in a bed. So it does not recommend, couples or whatever kind of getting one of these for that feature. That you should turn it off, because I guess it can also kind of tell when you're moving around and like don't know if it's like tracking how long you're sleeping, but they can tell like how restless you are and all that. So yeah, kind of a weird device, but sure, whatever.
Yeah, I'm not mad like most of the internet is for, you know, Nintendo making this announcement, because, you know, they do make a lot of interesting and strange things, such as, you know, Labo, you know, Ring Fit Adventure, which ended up taking off and was awesome. But yeah, not gonna lie, I did buy one of these, but not for me. My brother actually wanted one, and he's someone that does not like using his phone as an alarm. And in all honesty, like, you really shouldn't be using your phone as an alarm anyway. That's actually worse for your sleep. So yeah, it'll be interesting, like, getting his impressions. Maybe I'll even try it out. I'm interested in seeing, like, how this continues to grow. Like, obviously, we already saw a day one update for this, like, you know, getting, like, new games and other sounds into it. One thing that I'm a little bit dismayed, though, is that, like, yeah, you know, we talked about the $100 price tag. That's a little expensive, especially when we consider the fact that this is really aimed towards kids, because, you know, kids are going to sleep alone. But yeah, like, I saw that when someone opened it, it was like done through it's powered by USB, and there's no wall plug. So I was like, oh, dang, it's $100 and it doesn't even have a real power brick. But okay.
Yeah. You could use the one that comes with your Steam Deck. Because that comes with a USB cord, the USB-C cord that plugs into the wall, or an outlet or whatever. It's like a faster charge thing, but yeah. I assume they are one off of, you'd plug the same plug that you use for your phone, I guess, if you're putting that on your nightstand as an alarm.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, I'm also a person that does not use my phone for an alarm. It sits charging all night. I don't want it to do anything that disturbs that. But yeah, I haven't had an alarm for a while. I had one since like I was in high school that had the ability to do like two alarms, and then had a ability to auto toggle for daylight savings time and all that. Also was supposed to be able to keep its time even when it gets unplugged. Though towards the end of me using it, that part had been worn out. And all that, but yeah, I don't see any need for this. Cause especially the weird thing is, like, it can sense what you're doing in bed, and once it senses motion, at least once you're supposed to be up after the alarm, it'll start just playing a bunch of sound effects from whatever game you have the theme set to. You might hear, I think you can see this in the trailer, I hear the bunch of Mario sound effects going. And it's like, that's a little bit much for what you need at the beginning. Like, that seems like a thing that would get your parents mad if they're not up before you. They're just hearing a bunch of coin noises and all that. So yeah, that's Nintendo's weird hardware thing they announced. So yeah, let's get to some more news. Metaphor Re Fantasio seems to be doing pretty well, as they have already surpassed 1 million units shipped and sold digitally. So,
yep.
That's great for, I think this was within the first day of launch. So, that is great news for them. So, that's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Excited to see what number that gets to pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, like, last week we were seeing people on Twitter, like, sort of flame Atlas for saying, oh, Metaphor Re Fantasio is a marketing is terrible, especially since it's all Xbox and we haven't really seen much out of it. And yeah, well, they just sold 1 million copies, you know. That's probably not because of the Xbox machine, but, you know, launching worldwide for every platform, including PC, matters. So, yeah.
Well, every platform but the Switch. So no thanks to Nintendo.
No one's counting that anymore.
Yeah. I feel like the demo was the big marketing for this game. Letting people actually try it out and tell their friends about it or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I never played it, but, you know me, like, when it comes to demos, I want to be able to carry over my progress, and this allows you to do that. So that was definitely a good move.
Yeah. So there you go. That's some good news. Let's get to some more. I don't know if this is good news or not, but For whatever reason, three separate teams announced their existence in the wake of all the kerfuffle with ZAUM. The Disco Elysium team kind of falling apart. And these are three teams. I think there's four total now.
Yeah,
but three of them announced their presence in the same day, which is weird. Yeah, let's see what the teams are called. Yeah, there's Longdo, I think, is the one. This is led by Grant Roberts, a former senior writer at Bungie. Claims a team of developers from ZAUM, Rockstar Games, and other places, and is teasing what they call a psychogeographic RPG mechanic where players' choices reshape the world around them. So that could be cool. As says, people that worked on Disco Elysium and Planescape Torment and some other stuff, especially that they are influenced by. Let's see, the other team, Dark Math Games, which I think is a rad name for a studio. They're working on a True Detective RPG, not the brand True Detective, the show. This is called Triple X Night Shift, as they call it. They have a little bit of gameplay trailer there you can check out, with the Steam page as well. Claims a headcount of roughly 20 people, about half of which reportedly worked on Disco Elysium. It's art director is Timo Albert, who is credited under publishing for the original game. Studio also lists Power Kender, executive producer on Disco Elysium, who's also at the center of the controversy of the founders leaving the studio as a director who resigned last year. So there's that. And then Summer Eternal, which main distinction is led by two of the original writers on Disco Elysium, Argo Tulik and Olga Moskvina. It also includes ZAUM writer Dora Klinczyk, who has been working with Tulik on the direct sequel at the studio up until the mass layoffs earlier this year. So there you go. Three studios. Some claim to fame of having people that worked on Disco Elysium.
Yeah.
One having more tangible claims of working on it as writers. One having more, you know, publishing and producing history with it. And the other one, they don't really describe it too much, but yeah, that's interesting and surprising. To see which one ends up being the best game, I guess. That seems like one is probably going to hit sooner than the others, but we'll see on that. So that is some surprising news.
Yeah, seriously. Because I had been wondering what all the people who, you know, been at Zaum had been doing after they got bought out. And yeah, now we know. And as for like Robert Kurvitz himself, I have heard rumors that apparently he is working on another project. But yeah, that's about all I've heard. So
yeah. I mean, like it's definitely cool that they're all still working. Obviously like there's some turmoil that's caused them to do it in this way. Like it's weird, like trying to claim who is who when they're all doing like three different versions of what's ultimately the same thing. And, you know, that's not really going to do it any favors, but we'll see how that goes. I've never played the original game, so I don't really have much of an opinion there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's cool. Let's see, some more news. This happened on Sunday night, I think as a result of they had some Halo Infinite esports tournament going on. They decided to announce this as part of that. The studio of the Halo games, 343 Industries, is changing its name to Halo Studios as they are moving all their future Halo projects under Unreal Engine 5, including working on multiple new Halo games. There's a bit of a tech demo teaser video of sorts showing off at least some of their early work on the Halo stuff, which from what I've seen looks like a lot of areas from the first game. That's led a lot of people to assume one of these projects is probably a remake of Halo Combat Evolved. As like a probably a test case for working on the engine.
Yeah.
The visuals in this look pretty good for what they are. But yeah, this seems like it's probably a more solid choice than sticking with the Slipspace engine, I think it was called. Proprietary engine. As if they're still doing a lot of contract work with people that mainly work a lot of only work like 18 months on the game. Probably moving from a proprietary engine that none of them would know to Unreal Engine 5, that you would now be hiring a bunch of people that know that a bit better, would get you on the ground running a lot faster. Does not mean the games will come out faster. It's all dependent on sort of what these projects are and where, how much work they have to do that with. But yeah, it's a bit of a surprising one change in name. It seems like you could potentially think of it as they want to disassociate themselves from their previous work, I guess. I don't. That's not really an easy way to do that, considering they were working on the Halo stuff before, and they're still going to be working on Halo stuff. They've just cut the crap and named themselves Halo Studios. And yeah, like whatever this new work they have coming up, there's going to be a lot riding on it, because Halo's an important property for them. And Halo Infinite did pretty well, but not to the extent that they thought it would. Because they were certainly talking up that was going to be like the next 10 years of Halo was going to be built off of what Infinite was doing, and they barely even got like years out of that. Much less 10. So yeah, we'll have to see what's next up for this studio.
Yeah, I mean, you said it, like, Master Chief and Halo is the most important thing that Microsoft or the Xbox brand has. It's really important for Halos to be good. And, you know, in all honesty, Halo Infinite was good. It had a fine single-player campaign, and the multiplayer was great when it was first released and the beta moving on to it. The problem was, as for the hardcores go, and the hardcores are important, there wasn't a whole lot of support. A lot of the stuff just came too little too late, and people have already moved on. And Halo is not something you want to move on from. Like, you know, this was announced at HCS, at their World Championship. So, you know, it still means a lot to a lot of people. And, you know, hopefully we see something sooner than later, especially with their move to Unreal 5. But yeah, like, there's no reason why they can't succeed. Again, the last game wasn't bad. It just, it lost its steam.
Yeah. It was very much a game that was good, but also not really what people were expecting out of it. But hopefully whatever this next thing is going to be cool, but we'll have to see. Probably see them kind of go into quiet mode for a while. So we'll have to stay tuned on that. For whatever's next for Halo. But yeah, we got another thing, another bit of Nintendo news. The most mysterious thing that happened this week is they basically posted on their Twitter about there being some sort of Nintendo Switch Online play test that they were going to be taking applications for. Yeah, we will perform a test called Nintendo Switch Online Play Test Program related to a new feature for the Nintendo Switch Online service offered for the Nintendo Switch system. Says the only requirements for acceptance were users be 18 years old, have a registered Nintendo account, and an active Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion pack subscription. And they said, like, that they'll take applications at a certain point in the morning the following day. And it seemed like that filled up pretty much instantaneously. And so now people are very much like, well, what the hell is this thing? It seems like the emails people got that there would be, you would get a code for something the week of October 21st, with the test going live on October 23rd. You just need at least 2.2 gigs free on their Switch's internal storage. And they also recommend using TV mode and a wired connection during the test. So, not sure what exactly this could be. Maybe it's a further expansion of Nintendo Switch Online to maybe GameCube stuff. They're testing streaming features for that or whatever it is, but that could be pretty interesting to see.
All right.
Yeah. But yeah, that's your weird Nintendo news for the week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what's happening there. There's a whole lot of conjecture, whether it could be the Miiverse, whether it could be GameCube. I don't know. The main thing is with these NDAs, someone's going to break it. We'll find out soon, but you know, hopefully it's a cool thing.
Yeah. I feel like this is going to be the quickest NDA break in the history of NDAs. For any sort of like closed beta test thing, somebody's just going to find a way to post it without it being tied to their account or whatever, and we'll see how that goes. So yeah, that's going to be interesting to see.
But
I think that'll do it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining. As I said, this is episode 499, so we'll be celebrating episode 500 next week. We'll be having some more fun stuff to talk about, and that'll be fun. I'm gonna check what else is coming out this week, because I feel like it's maybe a lighter week for releases. Let's see here.
Definitely getting Neva.
Yeah, that's out this week. Coming up, yeah, here it is, the 15th. Yeah, there's Darksiders 2 Definitive Editions coming out on the new PS5 and Xbox. Neva. Mm-hmm. New World Eternum, the local MMO thing from Amazon. Mm-hmm. Nico Derrico, The Magical World is out this week.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Donkey Kong Country-esque kind of platformer thing. Squirrel with a Gun is coming out on consoles. So there you go for that. Mech Warrior 5 Clans is out on PS5 and Xbox and PC. Let's see here. Es Libra Garden, The Cave of Phantom Mist, the 2D RPG. The Quiet Place game is out. Eternites is coming out on the Switch. Let's see. Super Mario Party Jamboree is out this week.
Oh, yeah. That one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's finally out. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutants Unleashed game is out. As well as both of those Retro Realms games with the Halloween and Ash vs. Evil Dead. And that Unknown 9 Awakening game from Bandai Namco is out this week. So there you go. Some interesting stuff, but nothing too huge there. Right. But if you enjoy what you are hearing, feel free to let friends and select strangers know what's going on. Check out the show. And thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.